Hey, ladies, got a struggle? Need to vent? It's time to join your voice and get down to business with some critical thought, where like-minded ladies share their personal experiences to empower each other using critical thinking to make wise decisions. And now, here's your host, Lady C.
Hi, this is Lady C. Welcome to another episode of The Critical Thought. And in the upcoming episode, I'm going to be having a chat with Ashley, and we're going to be focusing on Jehovah's Witnesses and relationships. So, Ashley, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm glad you can be here. So, both Ashley and I are activists. We have both have had YouTube channels talking about Jehovah's Witnesses. Ashley has a video, her first video that she put out as an activist, and just coming out to tell people about her life and everything, it got over 180,000 views. So be sure you go out and take a look at Ashley Campbell on YouTube. But we want to kind of like focus in on relationships. So Ashley, before we get started with that, you want to just give us a brief, you know, history about, you know, like yourself and your parents kind of like growing up in this, because I don't think you mentioned that in your video. Like, you mentioned that your parents were 22 in their 20s when they got baptized. But did you ever get the backstory about why they even came in to this religion?
That is a really good question. First of all, I'll start by saying that I was born into the religion, and I left when I was around 20. My parents were not born in. They both converted in their 20s, as you mentioned, and they had no prior experience with the religion. And one thing that I think about people who convert is that it's typically when they have had something somewhat traumatic happen to them. And that's kind of a known thing with witnesses, especially when you're a witness and you're trying to bring others into the religion. When you're going out in service, you know to look out for people who have recently lost a loved one or who are struggling with their beliefs. And I think both of my parents, you know, I haven't talked extensively with them about their backgrounds, but I think they both did have somewhat traumatic upbringings. And I think that those pieces of their childhoods drew them to the religion. And I don't think it was specifically the witnesses. I think if at that point in their lives, if they had been approached by the Mormons or any other religion with a strong sense of community, I think that would have done it for them as well. So that's kind of what I've come to believe now, after having been out for about 12 years. I think that people are in because they've either joined at a vulnerable time in their life or they were born in, like I was.
Yeah. Now, what about your grandparents?
None of my grandparents were in. And in fact, I have a small family anyway, but it was really just my parents that were in.
Okay.
My converted. Yeah.
And how did their families take to the fact that they're joining this religion? Because most people just realize it's a cult, you know?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I think that's what they thought. And it's funny because one of my aunts is Catholic. And so, I mean, I'm sure as you've experienced, there's kind of this butting of heads between the witnesses and the Catholic. So I think my mom and her sister maybe always kind of looked at each other's religion like it wasn't the right religion. But I think that my other family did see it for what it is. So.
Absolutely. I know that all too well. My dad's mother, before, you know, he was born, she was actually going to be a nun. And she was in the convent for like 9 years, but she never converted fully to be a nun.
Wow.
So she ended up leaving for whatever reason, long story short, blah, blah, blah. Then her son ends up marrying a Jehovah's Witness. And my mom was not a witness when they got married. So she became one later. So you can just about imagine the butting of heads with the two of them. That was terrible, you know? But did you have any, relationship with your, you know, your grandparents outside of your parents? Did they allow you to visit them?
Yeah. I think that the relationship would have been stronger if they had been witnesses. You know, as with anyone in my life, because as a witness, you're really supposed to spend a very limited amount of time with people outside of the religion. So my dad's parents, unfortunately passed away before I was born. So it was just on my mom's side. But yeah, I think it does kind of break that bond between family members, or if it's not totally broken, it's just not as strong as it would have been otherwise.
I see. Your father's parents weren't even in the picture at all. Now, right. What about, and you don't have any siblings either, right?
I do have two half siblings, but where they're both half, they didn't have the same experience with the religion that I did. My sister lived with her mom most of the time, so she just was never really into it. And my brother did live with us full time, but it was a very different dynamic between the two of us. It was a very different kid than I was. I was very much a people pleaser from like the day I was born. And I was overachieving, very much a perfectionist, even as a child. So I think that I was always striving to be the best, you know, really good witness, even as a kid. Where my brother, he always had this sense of something's up with this and I don't like it, even from day one. So he was never baptized. So, you know, not being baptized means that there is a completely different take on your expectations. I was baptized when I was 12. So, you know, of course, from the day that you're baptized, you have all of these rules and it's very strict, because if you make one small misstep, then you're subject to the religion's disciplinary action, which I was three times. So
that had to be really tough, because I can't even imagine. I always tell people when I was 14, I was still making mud pies, but I couldn't even imagine having that type of a responsibility. And it was really good for me, because my mom, she only expected us to go out on Saturdays, and we only went out on Sundays in field service. I'm talking about field service. We only went out on Sundays if we didn't go out on Sunday. I mean, we only went out on Sundays if we missed Saturday field service. So if my mom did weekly service, she didn't, you know, like tug us along with her, you know, drag us to the out in field service and all that through the week, where I heard that other kids, their parents did that to them. And so you took on a huge responsibility at the age of 12. To do that. Now, in listening to your story, the video that you first put out, you had mentioned that your dad was inactive most of your life. What was up with that?
Yeah, that definitely created an interesting dynamic between my parents and I, where my dad was inactive, meaning that he didn't go to meetings or participate in field service, but he still, I think, believed. And I truthfully, I'm not sure the motivations behind that, but I know that it was tough for my mom. And I think, you know, she was doing the best she could, trying to gain everlasting life for her family, which, you know, we know isn't real, but to her, it was very real. So I think it did make it hard for her to justify the actions within the religion, and trying to keep me in line when I was kind of struggling as a teenager. But though my dad was inactive, he always, you know, backed up the religion's belief system.
Oh, so you mean to tell me that as he's being an inactive participant, he's making sure that you're doing everything and toeing the line of what needs to be done as a child growing up in the religion?
You are correct. Yes. Yes. I know.
But wait a minute. We're talking about inactive, not going to meetings and service, all the whole thing, the whole shebang. He's not doing anything.
Right, right. Yeah, and I'm sure, as you can imagine, as a kid, and especially as a teenager, when I'm starting to, you know, gain my own beliefs and understand the world, it was frustrating. It was very frustrating. And then, you know, not only dealing with that kind of hypocritical issue within my family, you know, as a little kid, I thought my dad was going to die at Armageddon, which is scary and it's sad. And, you know, I wouldn't wish that on any little kid. And, you know, that's not specific to my situation. I think, you know, as a kid growing up in a religion, any person that you have any type of relationship with, if they are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, that's what you're taught. Believe, you know, that they're not going to make it through. So as a kid, it's sad.
Well, that is a lot to, that's a lot to put on a child. Yeah. It's really interesting. Now, were you going to the meetings and hearing this, that your dad's going to die at Armageddon, or were you hearing it also from your mom?
I don't think my mom and I really addressed that topic too much, because I don't know that she could have said anything that I wasn't learning at the Kingdom Hall. It was kind of just understood between us, kind of an unspoken thing that we knew that was what was going to happen to him.
So that means that you were one of those kids that went to the meeting, like all other kids, that listened to what you heard from the platform, and you believed all of the stuff you heard. Now, I'm going to tell you something about this little kid. When I see, I'm an early riser, so I would go to sleep at the meetings, and I didn't get a beating. My dad was not a witness, and I went to the Kingdom Hall, and at 8 o'clock promptly, at, you know, like the theocratic school and service meeting book study, at 8 o'clock, I was asleep. And there was nothing that my mom could do to wake me up, because I was just that little kid that could not keep my eyes awake. So maybe that was a good thing for me. But I never, ever thought that my father, who was actually in the military, you know, like straight up Mark of the Beast. Remember how they used to talk about people in the military, Mark of the Beast? I never, ever thought that he was going to be killed at Armageddon. It was never, I never heard those stories. I was there, but I was asleep. Oh, my God. So you took all that in, and you're living all this like, oh my God, what am I going to do? My dad's going to die at Armageddon. He's not going to the meetings. Your dad was baptized, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So he was going to get double duty, double destruction. You know? Oh my God. So now let's talk about the relationships and dealing with, you know, when you're looking at relationships. And you're probably going to be patterning this after what you're seeing in your own home, the people in the Kingdom Hall. Were there very many couples in your congregation?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you see good relationships, bad relationships?
Yeah, I think you kind of see it all. You see it all. There are, you know, within any group of people, and especially religion, I think there are people who are super into it. They're like the model witnesses. You have these couples who are, you know, pioneers, or they're just very well liked within the congregation and you kind of look up to them. You have that all the way down to, I remember a woman in my congregation had an unbelieving husband who I think caused her a lot of grief. So you really see a large kind of spectrum of relationships. And the best ones, the ones that you want to model your own life after, are the ones who are, you know, serving Jehovah in their every breathing waking moment. So, yeah.
So at that point, you're being groomed. You're looking, basically, a lot of times it's like people see things. They look at what's happening around them. They try to be like those people around them. And eventually You know, it, all of this just rubs off on you. So like you talked about in your video as well that you got married at a young age. You talked about you quit going to school. What was the deal with the schooling? Were you homeschooled or were you going to regular public school?
I was in public school. I wasn't homeschooled, thankfully, which I think is common within the witnesses and something that I believe is very damaging for witness kids, you know, not having that escape. But when I was a teenager, I was baptized. So I definitely had to live my life in a way that allowed me to stay within the structure and the rules of the organization. There were times in my teenage years when I really struggled with the religion. I think that, you know, being a teenager is hard enough as it is, even when you don't have any of this kind of stuff going on. So I kind of did some flip-flopping where I was baptized at 12, and I think up until I was 15 or 16, I was putting a lot of effort into being a zealous witness. And I was spending a lot of time with a particular couple in my congregation who were kind of those model witnesses, pioneers and whatnot. And when I was kind of 16, I think 17, I started kind of struggling and thinking like, that, you know, I'm not happy. This isn't adding up for me. You know, as you grow older and you can, you know, formulate your own kind of opinions and you're kind of analyzing the information that you're receiving from the platform and from these publications that you're reading. For me, I was kind of looking at this stuff like, this doesn't add up. And I don't really think I agree with this anymore. I was kind of starting to see through what I had been taught to believe. So there were times around that age that I was thinking, this is not for me. But then as I, you know, got a little older, I was thinking, you know, because I still kind of innately believed it. So I flip-flopped again and kind of got back into it. So I'm sorry, not, I can't remember your original question.
No, that's good. This is good. This is good information. Mainly I was trying to figure out was, did you like going to school?
Yeah. 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 It was my escape, you know, because growing up as a witness kid, you are only allowed to associate with the people in your congregation. And I did not have a lot of kids my age when I was growing up that I could associate with. So yeah, school was like, if I didn't have school, I don't know what I would have done. It would have been really tough. Yeah.
And that's where my disconnect was when you were saying that you quit. You dropped out, right?
Yeah. When I was, I got through my sophomore year of high school. And so I had started talking about, I was having issues with the religion when I was around 16. And I really just wanted to be kind of done with it. I was over it. I was really angry and angsty about the whole thing. And I wanted to stop going to school. I wanted to start making money so that I could be out on my own and away from the religion. I stopped going to school after my sophomore year, and I started working full time so that I could save money.
And this, at that point, now looking back on all of that, you know, we get emails from people all the time that are like underage, and now we don't get like a whole ton of emails, but we have received several emails in the past with people who are underage and they're like, I don't want to be a witness anymore. I want to get out of this house. What would you say to that person who only has a couple of years left? Mm-hmm. They can, you know, with before they be turn 18, what would you say to them? Knowing what you know now?
Yeah, I think I would have to say what no one in that position wants to hear. Because if you're a minor, there's nothing you can do. You're not your own guardian. you have to stay with your parents. I don't think there is any type of solution that another adult can offer someone who isn't 18. And that, oh, to me, is just the saddest thing, because I remember how hard it was for me, and it breaks my heart to think of anyone else having to go through that, or having a situation that was, you know, worse than what I was going through. I think the biggest thing you can do to help yourself is to just ride it out. Find things that you can do that you are allowed to do, that will offer you any type of escape. It's tough being in the religion, because so much of your time is required to participate. So it's tough to have any type of hobby. You're not associating with anyone outside of the religion. So you're kind of just always doing Bible study and like stuff to do with the religion. But I think just really focusing on anything you can do that will make you happy for the next 2, 3, however many years until you're able to remove yourself. And even when people turn 18 and they're legally able to leave, you might not be able to, you know, now all of a sudden you're in the world, you have no prior job experience. So you have to get a job, you have to be able to afford an apartment. I totally recognize the struggle that people are going through. And I think, it is not something that has an easy solution for anyone. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. I can't even imagine at 18, 16, any of those ages, leaving my house with my parents and being on my own.
Yeah.
And I did not move out of the house from my parents until I went to go serve where the need is great with my pioneer partners. Mm-hmm. And it was 4 of us, and we could all pay bills together.
Yeah.
But to do that by myself, or to be in the world with some guy hanging around, you know, like just, you know, like you're somebody's prey, you know, because I mean, there's a lot of people looking for lonely people that don't have any experience living, and they take advantage of people.
Right.
And you don't want to be one of those people, you know? Now, were you living on your own when you left school? Did you leave the house as well?
No, I was still living with my parents until I got married to a Jehovah's Witness, and then I left home to live with him.
Now, how did all that transpire? You're, you know, getting married at such a young age. When I saw your video and I saw how young you were, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really not uncommon within the religion for people to get married so young. I think because that is one of life's goals. You know, if you're not pursuing college or any type of career, you're supposed to get married and, you know, start a family, and serve Jehovah. That's, you know, that's your goal. Especially as a woman who cannot, hold any type of position within the structure of the organization. That's really what you're looking forward to. So yeah, at that time, you know, I'd been a really zealous witness. Then I had been kind of on the fence about it. And then I was kind of back to, you know, being zealous about it. So when we got married, I was 17 when we got engaged, and I was freshly 18 when we got married. So, which happens with a lot of witness kids, as I said.
Was this brother in your congregation?
No, he was in Southern Maine, and he was a couple hours north from my congregation. He was someone that I kind of knew through, you know, a witness friend of a witness friend. So he was a few years older than I was. And when we, you know, we kind of started talking and started, you know, doing what people do in their first meeting. And I think the expectation quickly became, from everyone around us, that we would get married. And, we kind of just went along with it. I think if it were up to us. We definitely wouldn't have done that. But, you know, growing up the way that you do and wanting to be a part of the, you know, a well-respected part of the community that you're in means going along with the norms within the organization. You know, it's not a rule, a written rule that you have to get married at 18. But it's definitely, it becomes kind of a social norm within people, especially as they develop goals for their future.
Right. Now, when you look at your parents' relationship, would you say that that had a bearing on how you entered your relationship or how you saw relationships?
I guess the biggest thing from watching my parents was knowing that I didn't want a relationship in which our beliefs were so different, because although, you know, my dad kind of backed things up, he wasn't going to the meetings, and that did create, I think, some tension between them. So when I got married, I think both he and I were a little bit on the fence about our beliefs. And then, you know, but we're both trying. We were trying to be good witnesses, trying to believe. And after we got married, my brain made that final switch, and I just thought, this isn't it for me. I don't want this religion anymore. And his situation was different than mine, where he has a really big family and they're all in the religion. So I don't think it's easy for someone like that to, even if they don't believe, for them to say that they're done with things. So I was on my way out and he was not going anywhere. So I knew that it would not have been easy to live that way if I had decided, you know, I no longer want to be one of Jehovah's Witnesses and he was going to stay in. There was no way we could have made that work. And that's not what I wanted for myself anyway. And then if we had children, I wouldn't have wanted them to go to the meeting. And he may have wanted them to go. So that I just don't think that you can have a really stable, loving relationship with two completely different belief systems. And especially where, you know, it really would be opposite belief systems, because now at this point in my life, I really feel that the religion is damaging. And I'm part of the mindset of everyone can believe what they want to believe, of course, and no one should be judged for their beliefs. But the witnesses are part of something that is really damaging for people, and it's hurt so many people, and it's continuing to hurt people. So I can't be okay with people supporting that type of organization. And I think that, you know, it just wouldn't have worked.
So. Right. Now, for your husband, when you guys were dating, how long did you date?
Not long at all. I think we started dating and then were married within 6 to 8 months. It was very quick.
Well, that's pretty standard, 6 months for Jehovah's Witnesses. So yeah. Like when you were dating, what did you measure him by in terms of likes? Would this man be a good husband? Was it all about just because, oh, he's a Jehovah's Witness? So obviously this is going to work. Is that how you looked at it?
Yeah, I think I was so young that I just didn't even know what to look out for. We got along really well. We had a lot of fun. And I think that was all that I cared about at 17. So.
And getting away from your parents.
Yes, that was a big one. Yeah.
So what are you going to tell us about relationships? What can you kind of like, you know, help us to appreciate in your experience in dealing with relationships? What aspect of relationships would you like to discuss in this, you know, in our conversation?
You know, I think that growing up in the religion, it definitely, it changes the way that we interact with each other socially. It definitely has, it creates the type of social behavior that works within the religion, but then on the outside, it's different. It becomes a struggle. So I think when forming relationships, whether they're romantic relationships or friendships or professional relationships, I think that we really missed out on learning the social norms and the social constructs around the development of those relationships with people. And I'm not an expert, so I can't put a pin in it. But I think that as a child, you know, having experiences and interactions with people around you, you spend your whole childhood kind of developing this sense of behavior and learning about the world around you. And then you develop habits accordingly. And I think that growing up in the religion, we developed the habits necessary to be a Jehovah's Witness. And when you leave the religion, you have a completely different set of habits than the people around you. And you're no longer developing as a person, at, you know, like we were when we were kids. So I think it can be extremely difficult to adapt to the new world around you. And, you know, not only are you kind of struggling to form new friendships, but if you're leaving the cult, you could be leaving your family. You're leaving your friends. A lot of witnesses will completely surround themselves with those from the organization. So you could be working with witnesses. I mean, every person you come in contact with could have been a Jehovah's Witness. So then in your new life, you have no one to fall back on as a support for yourself. So I think it can be very isolating, and it can be really difficult to form new relationships with people. And there are so many things I think that affect that development. One of them being the practice of disfellowshipping people. So growing up, I was part of the same congregation for 20 years, and there were 120 people in my congregation, but those people become like your family. You know, those are the people that, the only people that you're associating with, and you get to know everyone really well. These people become so familiar to you. They're the people that have raised you. If someone is disfellowshipped or they leave the organization, you then have to cut them off. I mean, from the second it's announced at the platform, you have to act like that person doesn't exist. And I would liken that to kind of a death in your family, you know, because here's this person that you had a relationship with just yesterday. You could have been really close with this person, really cared about them. And then all of a sudden, you know, you have to just cut them off. And I've often wondered kind of what that does to your psyche as a person and how that can change your view of relationships. I think that humans are so resilient that type of thing, with how painful that can be, having to experience those, you know, quote unquote deaths of the people that you care about. I think that there may even be some type of response that we have in order to protect ourselves from that pain. It, you know, I think I have experienced a little bit of, maybe like a hardening of the heart when it comes to relationships, because, you know, you don't want to get hurt. So it's just so interesting, and religious cults are so obscure that there is really no way to know definitively how it affects you as a person, but it absolutely affects our relationships going forward. I am not the type of person to, stifle my opinions. And I think it's so expected of, women in the religion that, you know, it is considered not being godly and, you know, not doing what you're supposed to do if you voice your opinion to your husband, if you're disagreeing. And I just think that is, it's so damaging for women and especially young girls, you know, who are taught that they are basically a second class citizen. And I think the world has tried to progress on that issue, or at least, you know, in some places there has been so much progression, and being in the cult, you know, just especially living in America, being in the cult is such a regression from where our nation has come in women's rights. And it's amazing to me, you know, so many things about the religion. I just think back and I'm like, I can't believe I believed that. And I can't believe I let myself be that second class citizen. And, you know, glad we're out.
You are absolutely right. And I grew up in an era where this is the way it plays out. If a husband and wife are in public and the wife disagrees with the husband, or the wife steps up to the plate and makes the decision in front of everybody for the couple, mm-hmm. people would say, if she would do that in front of all of these people, what is she doing behind closed doors? Mm-hmm. It doesn't really mean that, but that's the way it plays out. They think that if you step up and say, that's not true, you know, this is not how it is, if you do this out in public, then mm-hmm. wow, you're probably beating them down behind closed doors. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that's a societal thing too.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that religions, it's even worse in a religion, but mm-hmm. societal norms, that's like a societal norm. You know, I mean, I don't know about the men beating the woman down, like verbally. I'm talking about verbal beat down, not a physical beat down. But I'm just saying, if you're in a relationship and you are the person that has more assertiveness behind you, mm-hmm. now this is what women have problems with. If a woman is assertive to an onlooking man, to a man that's looking on, he looks at that at her assertiveness as aggression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't be a person that can make a decision. You
right,
can't
right.
be a person that stands to the plate and knows what you want to do. You're aggressive in their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look at you as being assertive. So right. if you're married to an individual that is really like, they're not going to make any waves, they're not going to stand up, they're not going to say anything, this is the situation in my family. My mom, she was not going to stand around and let people take advantage of us. Mm-hmm. And that's what made my life much easier. Just on a general standpoint, where my dad might have seen things happening mm-hmm. and he would just be like, let it go. Or I'm not going to say nothing. Or I'm not going to stand up and say, you know, my family was here, da, 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 whatever it needs to be said. He wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom would say, no, we're not going to tolerate this kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. We're going to tell these people, you know, what needs to be done, how this needs to be, you know, processed and handled and everything. And so because she did that, she got looked at as being, oh, you're sidestepping your husband, you're right. usurping his headship, this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. When all she was doing was standing up for her family,
mm-hmm.
you know, letting people know, we're not going to tolerate this bad or poor behavior. Right. And so this is what a lot of women find themselves in. If you're married to someone who's like passive, yes. you have those issues.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, good for your mom, because I'm sure it was also hard for her when she's supposed to be kind of subject to her husband's decisions, but he's not a witness. So that's another really tricky thing within the organization, because you're supposed to do what your husband says. Unless he's not a witness, then you have to do some of what he says. But unless it has to do with the religion, it's like this whole, you know, tricky, complex rule book around that. So I'm sure that wasn't easy for her either. But I'm glad that she stood up for you guys.
Yeah. But when I say stand up for us, I'm just talking about maybe she went to my class and the teacher was treating me wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then my mom is standing up, but my dad is sitting there like, and he's not going to say anything. Or maybe, you know, like some, like the next door neighbor is parking their car, you know, like halfway in your driveway, you know, different stuff like that. Just stupid stuff like that, you know, and then you're trying to like say, and then my dad is like, say, oh, don't say that. Don't leave them alone. Don't do this, you know. So then your mom is like standing up for what needs to be said. And then my dad's like, he's being passive and he's not saying it. And because he's not saying it, like as a kid, you're looking at him like saying, go, mom. You're like, so I was like this, go, mom, go, mom, go, mom, you know. And you're like appreciating the fact that she's speaking up. Or let's say you go out to dinner and someone is trying to decide what restaurant they want to go to. Mm-hmm. And you know that every time you go out with this particular family, they always want to go to this restaurant over here that you always hate. But my mom, she may speak up and say, no, let's go over here. Where my dad would be the one that would be saying, let's just go along to get along. Because, you know, some people have that go along to get along personality.
Yes.
And so sometimes you got to speak up. So if my mom would speak up in those times, she would be looked at as the person that's, you know, needs to fall back.
Yes.
But you don't have to always fall back.
No. No.
You know?
No. And it's just insane to me that we would not have equal rights, especially within the organization. But it is, it's a difference of personality, as you mentioned, and doesn't mean that we shouldn't voice our opinions or we shouldn't be assertive. It makes you try to change yourself and your personality if you know you're going to be looked down on.
Yeah. Right. So when you think about this, think about like this, how many people have been raised in this religion mm-hmm. to just not say one word?
Yeah.
They don't speak up for themselves. They don't say, hey, look, could we do it this way next time? Or mm-hmm. they feel like they've committed some kind of a sin because they spoke up to be happy. We're talking about to be happy, to
right.
finally do something that you want to do instead mm-hmm. of somebody else calling all the shots all the time. That's right. what my issue is. And I think I learned that from my mom to the point where I'm very nice about, you know, like saying things to people, like if I don't want to go to some restaurant or I don't want to do something, and I'm not talking about nothing major, but I'm just saying, I am so glad that because of looking at what she did, I know how to step up to the plate and tell people what I may not like or what I may agree to, where right. other people would just go along, not be happy. And the next thing you know, they spent 20 years following somebody and doing something that somebody else wanted to do that they totally hated. And this is the issue that I find with, you know, certain types of relationships, because mm-hmm. you have to have a balance. You know, if you have like a person that knows how to pull back at the right time, so mm-hmm. you don't have to always get your way all the time.
Right.
You know, but then there's sometimes when you want some happiness. You worked all week. Now you want to go, you know, before pre-COVID, that is, you know, you want to go out to your favorite restaurant. You want to hang out, whatever. You know, you could do those things, you know, and you can make those suggestions and stuff like that. And I know I'm being very I'm just saying restaurant, but I mean, it could be anything. I'm just trying to keep this kind of simple. Mm-hmm. I try to tell people, don't be afraid to speak up.
Right.
You know, tell people what you want to do, because at the end of the day, you have to be happy too. You can't just be in a one-sided relationship.
Right. Yeah. Which is what so many witnesses go through. It's what you're taught to go through. That is the expectation, that it is one-sided. It's all on the man in the relationship. And I think to your point, a relationship where your partners are equal is all about compromise. And, you know, if one person is the only one doing the compromising throughout the relationship, then there's no way that person can find, you know, real true happiness in the relationship. And I just don't think, you know, that bodes well for the other person either, because no one can be happy if both people aren't happy. And both people aren't, you know, on equal footing and getting what they need out of the relationship. And to be a Jehovah's Witness wife or a Jehovah's Witness woman is to be the one who is always doing the compromising. And I think it's so good that you had the example of your mom. I think so many people only rely on the example of, you know, what they're taught from the organization. And it's so important to get out of that mindset and to really value yourself as an equal partner within the relationship so that you both can be happy and really build something solid and long lasting.
I totally agree, because I feel like when you are trying to lead this religion as well, self-esteem comes into play. Yes. So like when you were a Jehovah's Witness and you were in this marriage as a young person, mm-hmm. how did that affect your self-esteem?
Yeah, I think it's hard. Your self-esteem is always kind of on the brink as a witness, I think, because, you know, you have so many expectations set upon you, but then you're an imperfect person. So you're always messing up. You're always making mistakes, and then you're beating yourself up for it. And I don't think it's easy, and it's sometimes impossible to develop a real sense of self-love when that's what you're being taught. And I think that definitely translates in a big way into relationships, because, you know, you truly cannot fully love another person if you don't love yourself. And, you know, I've been out for about 12 years, and I, you know, candidly will admit that it took me a long time to understand that and to understand how to love myself first and then give love to others. I think, you know, being in a relationship, that is so important. It's so important on your own to develop your self-esteem and to love yourself. But to be in a relationship, especially a marriage, I definitely didn't have that when I got married. I think part of it was just being so young. But then, you know, the other part is I only know what I've been taught. And so, yeah, it definitely, I think, played a big part in my life when I was, you know, getting married at 18 and not really understanding relationships and what my role really should be in the relationship.
Well, you know, you said you wanted to get married to get out of your parents' home. Mm-hmm. And so what did you think after you got married? How was your relationship with your husband? Did you see any difference in being at home with your parents and being married?
Yeah, it was a huge, huge difference. I think in some ways it felt the same, where I was under the authority of someone else who was a witness, and I was supposed to do what they said, you know? So that aspect was the same, I think. But I think I had this expectation that I would be just super happy and everything would be fine. But, you know, the truth was, I was a teenager in a religious cult, and nothing about that is easy. So I think my expectations were, you know, they were not met. It was kind of a letdown, knowing that, you know, oh, okay, I went from serving my parents or being under their authority to just being under another person's authority, who, you know, also wanted me to be a good witness and do those things. So it was, it wasn't what I expected.
Oh my goodness. So like, was your husband really into this religion? You know, like your mom, you said that your mother, I think another one of your videos you did, that your mother was really a strict witness. Do you think that your husband, was he a strict witness?
I wouldn't say he was a strict witness. I mean, that definition is so hard because, you know, there are varying degrees of how zealous someone is as a witness. I think that he wanted to kind of do all of the normal things that witnesses do, you know, go to all of the meetings and go out in service every week. And I think that I was so done with all of it, you know, 'cause I kind of just reached that point where I finally decided, like, I cannot do this anymore. I want to be happy. And so I didn't want to go to the meetings. I didn't want to go out in service. And so any of it just wasn't working for me. So I wouldn't say he was strict, but just him being a witness at all just wasn't it for me.
I can understand that, because it's like you said, there's so much involved in the religion. It's not like you just go to church on Sunday and then you got, like, you know, Monday through Saturday. It's like a ritual. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that, what the ritual is, you know. So what kind of learning experience do you think you had by, you know, being married so young?
You know, I think the biggest takeaway that I have is that, you know, I guess I feel bad that it took that big step for me to understand what I want. I think that I kind of knew what I wanted, but I was hoping that, getting married would help me be a better witness and help me, kind of get over the struggles I was having with the religion. And it clearly didn't. Those struggles that I was having were valid. And I wish I had known that I was going to leave anyway. And, you know, I do feel bad that it took that big step for me to realize. So I think, you know, going forward in the future, it's been important for me to understand what I want and what will make me happy, not what will make Jehovah happy. And that is my biggest takeaway, I think, from my entire life experience. And, you know, there's a certain, I don't want to say selfishness, but self-care that you need to offer yourself. And I think as a witness, you are just taught to put your own feelings and desires on the back burner. Even for simple things like hobbies, as I mentioned, it's hard to do anything for yourself because that takes time away from what you could be doing for Jehovah. So yeah, I think for me, it's, learning what I need and what I want and going after it and not trying to make everyone around me happy before I'm allowed to be happy.
That is so true. Those words are so true. Like, we, you know, with our YouTube channel, and people send us emails a lot of times, we find that there are people currently dating individuals, and they're in the process of kind of like waking up to the tune of, I don't think this is the truth, but I'm in a relationship. And it's almost like they're not thinking about, you know, how the other person feels. You know, you're in a relationship with someone, you're waking up, but the other person, they're just going strong. So what would you recommend for people who are in the process of waking up from this religion and they're in a relationship with someone about to get married? Would you recommend that they go through with the marriage, or what should they do?
No, I think that is a really tough one, because it would be nice to believe that if two people love each other, that nothing can come in between them. But I just don't see the long-term value in continuing a relationship with someone who is just going to be constantly disappointed by your actions or your inaction. And not only that, not only on a personal level with the person you're in a relationship with, but those people that they're seeing at the meetings every week, they're going to judge your partner. They're going to be asking them, oh, where's your husband or wife? Or, you know, what are you doing to help them? And even if your partner, on their own accord, wasn't disappointed with you or wishing that you would be part of their, life as a witness, that will be drilled home to them constantly by other people. You know, one of the biggest tenets of the religion is keeping a watchful eye on the other people in your congregation to make sure that they're not misstepping, that they're not, you know, tainting the flock. And I wouldn't want my partner to have to go through that kind of judgment either. So, you know, I would never recommend that two people in and outside of the religion continue a relationship. Unfortunately, I don't think it's healthy or good for either person. That's my opinion.
I mean, you know, when you think about just two people that are married, mm-hmm. that were both Jehovah's Witnesses and what they're going through.
Right.
And how one of them wakes up and then all of a sudden the other one just doesn't want to, you know, wake up and go along with the program. Or I should say it like this. You got two people in a relationship. Both of them are witnesses. Mm-hmm. One of them finds out the truth about the truth. This is not the truth. And they decide they don't want to belong to the religion anymore. Mm-hmm. Then the other spouse is just kind of like left hanging.
Yeah.
You know, like, what do they do? And right. So now you're not even married.
Right.
So you got to think about these things, you know, like I was going to ask you a question about the relationships, about when we receive emails from people talking about, oh, I'm in a relationship with a Jehovah's Witness mm-hmm. and they are not a witness. And a lot of times it's a male that's dating a Jehovah's Witness woman. Mm-hmm. And they really like this woman. What do you think that the Jehovah's Witness women have that so many men are interested in?
Gosh, I wonder. Could it be the constant going along with everything they say? I think you know, as a woman, you're taught you're supposed to go along with what the men say. And of course, that's perfect. Perfect for the guy. She's going to do whatever he says. So it works out.
Like the stepper wives.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. And you know, it is not easy to have a difference of opinion. But that's something you learn as a human. You are never going to agree 100% of the time with the person that you're with. That would be unnatural. So, part of, I think, the beauty of a healthy relationship is being able to recognize, okay, we have differing opinions. You can have yours and I can have mine, and we don't have to hate each other. We can get along with that. Or if we need to make a decision, we can compromise a little bit for me, a little bit for you, or I'll let a little bit go and you let some go. And now this becomes this great teamwork, you know, that we're both working to make sure that the other person is happy and that we're happy ourselves. So of course, you know, I think it would seem good at first, you know, that you're with such an agreeable person and they don't seem to ever disagree with you. It seems like maybe you guys are on the same page, or she's just really passive and she's just, you know, cool with whatever you're going to decide. But I think that is not a long-term recipe for success.
No, it's not. You know?
Yeah. The things that I have encountered in my life after leaving that I didn't expect are so numerous. The many things that, like, you realize are not that way outside of the cult. It's kind of like a wake-up call sometimes. So much of it, it's unexpected.
Right. It's just crazy. So now, what would you do differently? Like, for instance, okay, you got baptized at 12 years old, right?
Yeah.
If you would not have gotten baptized at 12, how would you have looked at your situation growing up in the home and dealing with having to be this strict, goody-two-shoes Jehovah's Witness? Mm-hmm. How would things have been different?
Oh, I think I would have spared myself a lot of emotional pain if I had not been baptized. That is the one thing I would change, because, you know, now at this point in my life, I can't say I necessarily have regrets, because I went through what I went through and it wasn't fun, but it made me who I am today. And I do love the person that I am today. And I have worked so hard and continue to work so hard to be a good person. And I think growing up the way that I did is a huge part of that. I don't know who I would be without that. But I think I would never advise someone to be baptized, at least until you're 18 and you can make your own decision as an adult. Because, you know, when I was going through my struggles, I was never allowed to just easily leave, because I always had this looming kind of punishment hanging over me. Any mistake that I made, I could be punished for. And I was. I was disfellowshipped. I was reproved a couple of times. And so part of being human is making mistakes and not being perfect. And that's just not allowed as a witness. So, yeah, I wish I didn't get baptized. But, you know, now that I did and that I went through all of this, now I can help people who have been through what I've been through. And so many people have come to me just with the little bit that I have out online and said that I really helped them. And that just makes it all worth it. So, yeah, just for anyone who's listening who isn't baptized, just don't get baptized.
So. But you know what I found to be so amazing, or just, I couldn't believe it. So we got our YouTube channel and we would get emails from people. And we're up here talking about the Jehovah's Witnesses and how this is not the truth and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But in their email, they would say, I'm disfellowshipped. Mm-hmm. So I understand if you can't talk to me. Oh. And it's like, we have committed the most, the most unforgivable sin, according to Jehovah's Witnesses, going out talking against the governing body. And now we have a person that's disfellowshipped asking us if, or saying to us that, would they understand if they know we can't talk to them? Aww. And it just puts a smile on my face. And I'm like, this whole arrangement is bogus, you know?
So it is. It just makes no sense when you really think about it and you really look at it for what it is. It's like, this is wild.
It is. I mean, it is. But you know what? The reason why they did that is because that was drilled into their head. Oh, they understood how they were treated mm-hmm. as disfellowshipped individuals. They understood that people were not allowed to talk to them. So they're not thinking that a person that has a YouTube channel talking against the organization as an apostate could really care less about their disfellowshipping. You know, we could care less about that because it doesn't mean anything to us anymore, you know? So for anybody listening to that, you know, that's probably a comfort for them, right?
Yeah. And you know, the thing is, I think being happy and being loved is a basic human right. Everyone alive on this earth deserves to be loved and deserves to be heard. And no one deserves to be shunned. I just think, especially for not following the bogus rules of the organization. And I think it's so sad to me, but also it's nice that people have the outlet, you know. What you guys do is so incredibly important for so many people. And I'm sure there are so many people out there who haven't told you the impact that you've had on their lives, but it's been huge. And I think that, you know, knowing that you deserve to speak to other people and to not be shunned, that's like
exactly
a thing to kind of get over.
I mean, JT and I were just having this conversation and we were talking about, there was an ex-Jehovah's Witness that contacted him, and he left a long time ago. So when we met this brother, he had been out for years before we left. Hmm. And so JT said, when that brother left, he said, it was really, really hard because there was nobody to talk to.
Yeah.
And I said, look, I think when we left, it was hard too, because there was no YouTube, there was no Facebook. They had those bulletin boards, but you couldn't see people's face. There was no WhatsApp out at the time when we were leaving. So you were still trying to calculate your spending on your cell phone.
The thing that I've said this over and over and over again to like every ex-Jehovah's Witness that I meet is the thing that helped me heal the most was connecting with other ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, because no one is ever going to understand you like they do. You know, there's so many nuances. There's, even down to the vocabulary. When you connect with another ex-Jehovah's Witness, they just know. They get you from the second, like your whole past, nothing needs to be explained. Maybe except for, you know, what congregation did you go to, or like, when were you baptized, that kind of stuff. But it is so, such an important thing to be able to relate to people and to know you're not alone, and you're not alone in your struggle. And so many people have been through what you've been through. And yeah, to your point, back in the day, you might think you were going through it alone, and you wouldn't be able to connect with the other people who are also there to validate your experience. Yeah. So it's so nice today. I think even though we've come so far in the realm of activism for ex-cult members, I think there could always be more, and we should keep going and keep spreading the word so that it is ubiquitous. You know, it shouldn't be anything as obscured as it is even today.
That's true. That is so true. So Ashley, this has been a really good organic conversation. I've really enjoyed talking to you because it's like we could connect because we've been there. We've been in the same situation in terms of religion and being a female and having to keep our little mouth shut, to go along to get along, try to be nice to people. I mean, I didn't go as far as my mom in terms of like, you know, like that. Because my mother was just going to tell you like it was, and the reason why my mom did what she did was because she had a rough childhood, and it was really hard for her, and her dad was really abusive and everything to them as kids. And so I guess for her, it was one of those things where she was just not going to just keep tolerating somebody, you know, verbally abusing her and different things like that. Mm-hmm. And so she just learned how to have a voice, and she had a voice, and she was going to have a voice. So when the brother told her, at the Kingdom Hall, when they were at the Kingdom Hall cleaning, and he told my mom to go wash the windows, she looked back at him and she said, "You clean them." She wasn't doing it, you know, because understand, you got to know people. See, people have to know your background, right? Okay, here's the deal. Mom was raised on a farm. They worked her from sun up to sundown. Wow. They barely got to play sports. They barely got to do different things. Mm-hmm. So if the brother would have understood her background, then he would have understood why she told him to clean the windows himself.
Yeah.
She don't clean her windows and everybody else's windows. She wasn't doing no more of that, but she wasn't cleaning windows. She was actually on a farm. But I'm just saying, you know, before people start looking at people and judging them, you got to know their background. You can't just assume that this person is just being a difficult person. She had a rough childhood. Yeah. And she was not going to take any, you know, orders from some brother who didn't pay her bills. You know, that was just her thing, you know? And so I encourage other women, I'm just kidding. Well, I mean, you know, because then people get to saying, oh, you know, women are trying to make other women, you know, treat their husbands bad and everything. I just believe in, you know, having a good dialogue, understanding each other, and letting somebody know how you feel. If you're in a loving relationship and you express to your significant other, you know, some of the things that you don't like to do or some of the things that you don't appreciate. Mm-hmm. And if that person really loved you, they would take that into consideration and they would begin to make you happy with the things that you want or the things that you don't want. You know, they'll be thinking about those things. And so relationships, like you were saying earlier, it's not just a one-sided thing. It's a two-sided thing. It's a 50-50. You know, a lot of people don't believe that, but it is, you know? So you got any final comments that you want to give to our audience, our listening audience?
Well, I think that just to kind of wrap it up as you did, don't be afraid to have a voice. Believe in yourself and trust yourself and know that you deserve to be happy. You deserve to be heard. And I think make yourself a priority is a big deal and important. So
I love that.
You know, it is such an important message that I think a lot of people, it can get lost on. Mm-hmm. And it really does work. You know, if you believe that and you make that your mantra until you believe it, then,
right.
know, that's how you're going to be happy and have successful relationships.
That is so true. So Ashley, I really enjoyed having you on the program and I look forward to having you again. Perhaps we could be on a panel together just talking about relationships with other ladies. Yeah. And we can all just have a little free-for-all conversation. But I really enjoyed your discussion and telling us all about your experiences growing up and talking about relationships. So thank you so much for being on the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful to be here.
Thank you.
If you've been in the struggle and want to appear as a guest on our show, email us at info@criticalthinker101.com. The views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Critical Thinkers.